Let's just take a quick minute to acknowledge that Dude Looks Like a Lady by Aerosmith is just a terrible song. I know that we're all realizing that Aerosmith are bad, actually, but even among Aerosmith songs, it's just awful. Just irritating, tacky, shrill. Anyway, Mrs. Doubtfire was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, I'm Sean Collier. I'm here with Maverick and Iceman.
Yeah, you are.
I am Merlin at best. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Merlin.
Isn't that Tim Robbins? Isn't he Merlin?
Sure.
Tag yourself. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Join the Navy.
And Camila Adams.
Danger Zone.
That's Top Gun, 50 and a third. That is almost as average as we can get, but not quite. We gave The Deep an even 50.
Oh, and it really deserved it.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree that that is the average movie. Top Gun was more average than The Sum of All Fears, which we gave 50.75, like 10 years ago, and The Toy, which we gave 51. So now on the eve of Top Gun Maverick not winning Best Picture.
This would be the morn after, not so much the eve.
On the morn yes. after.
Two morns after.
I am surprised. We'll probably have some, by the time you hear this, belated Oscar thoughts and you can't handle the truth. I am surprised it won but one Oscar.
I mean, it was a weird year because so many movies won nothing.
Yes.
I mean, it's lucky it got one.
Yes. How many? What?
Elvis got nothing. Sound.
Sound. That was it. I mean, how many are general interest categories? So there's 23 total Oscars. Three of those are shorts. One is animated. One is international. One is
documentary.
So 23 minus 6 is 17. There are 17 that theoretically anything is eligible for, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what? 7 of those went to Everything Everywhere
seven.
And 4 went to All Quiet on the Western Front? So
well, one of All Quiet, one international. So
right. 3 went to... So there wasn't a lot of room
right.
To spread the room with love beside. But yeah, I mean, did All Quiet win cinematography?
I think so, yeah. Top Gun wasn't even nominated in cinematography, though, remember?
Really?
That was like the big, everybody was like, did they
announce forget?
Wrong? What's happening here? That doesn't make sense.
You saw the sky
Are
and the
sure
planes?
Are we sure that we didn't swap out adapted screenplay?
Yeah, adapted screenplay. Just military jargon and great balls of fire. did you ever watch Maverick, Camila?
No.
I didn't think so.
Yeah, you don't need to. Nah, it is nice, though.
Do it. maybe 10 years from now. I'll be on a podcast and I'll have to watch
there
it.
You go. I guess what you can just, if you were in a situation where it's like, we're watching Top Gun Maverick now, what I want you to have a moment of is, Robin told me it will be okay.
Well, yeah. You know, I doubt that I will voluntarily put it on myself, but I will not angrily storm out of a room if it's on.
That's all I ask for.
Well, congratulations to Best Sound winner. It did go... a whole lot. So, but hey, we're on to another big hit. The hits keep on coming. Come on, Tony, give us, you know, one of these. I did a test draw and it's a movie called Hawaii. I don't even know what that is.
I know what it is. It was nominated for Oscars. It's on Tubi, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. The 60s.
Oh, wow.
What's Hawaii?
Oh, I don't really know anything about it, but it was made in the 60s. I'm pretty sure someone got like a supporting actor nomination in it.
See, that's what I want an hour from now. And so naturally we'll land on
a Lord of the Rings,
Harry Potter. And
do I have a veto? What's our veto status?
We got all kinds of vetoes.
I have one.
You and I both
have two,
one, and Camila has two.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
Great.
We got a fresh year.
Good.
Okay.
All right. I don't have time for any kind of nonsense.
But if it's something weird we've never heard of, roll with it.
Okay.
But more important business, Mrs. Doubtfire, Euphigenia Doubtfire herself. I mean, I certainly could say I grew up with this. This was a VHS in the house. We saw it in the theater. We watched it on video as a family when it came out later. I think my brother was really into it because I remember getting the DVD as one of the first DVDs had. I've seen it 10 times if I've seen it once before this. Not all the way through in a long time. Like, within the last few years, like, it had been on in a hotel, so I saw an hour of it.
I think we popped it on in early quarantine to be like, this'll be diverting.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't really... It felt like I was watching it for the first time all the way through in a really long time, because who among us remembers early quarantine?
Right, right.
But I definitely watched this a bunch as a kid. As I think I mentioned last week at my 10th birthday party, the first time I hosted a sleepover, we watched this movie. And, yeah, I feel like I can't really be... I can't tell if my feelings about this movie are valid or obscured too much by nostalgia, because I don't actually feel that much nostalgia for this, and I also am not going to give it a very high score, but it's possible that I should think this movie is awful, and I don't.
I think I'll give it a pretty... Well, we'll get to it. What's... You were a bit older when this came out.
I was in high school when this came out.
Right.
And I don't remember if I saw it in the theater or if we just rented it as a family, but I did see it in that time period. But I don't think I've seen it like all the way through since then, because a lot of stuff was like, I didn't even remember this part about this movie. It was happening. So there's not a lot of nostalgia there other than... For the slapstick of Robin Williams.
Yeah.
I think.
The general, I miss you, Robin Williams.
Yeah.
That I am 100%
right,
absolutely guilty of.
Right. But there's also, like, I am kind of slanted towards the overworked and over, just over it mom.
That's fair.
So I'm like, really just like. Yeah, Miranda, whatever her name was.
Miranda.
Like, you fucking tell him. Like, this is bullshit.
At one point, he calls her Moran. I hate nonsense nicknames
right.
like that.
That makes just, you just shorten it just for the sake of shortening.
Right.
Like, that's,
No. Like, if he called her Mer or Ran, right?
Yeah, sure.
Duh.
Duh.
Hey, duh.
No, there's a good, I watched about half of the deleted scenes, and there's a good cut they made where they're arguing in a little more detail about who's ruining their marriage. Mm. And he gets on her case for working too much, which is like, you live in downtown San Francisco with three children.
The biggest house,
sir.
In a giant house.
Big house.
And you not only don't have a consistent job, the first thing we see is you walking out on one you do have.
Right, exactly. What is she supposed to do?
Yeah.
Like, also, she has such a... like 80s, 90s movie job of interior decorator.
Right.
Pure theory.
Yes.
Never like drawings and the one scene where she just lists interior design works.
Yes. It's one of, it's definitely.
That's how they had to, they didn't have Google, these poor screenwriters, right? They had to go to the library and be like, can I see one of your books on interior decorating?
Just write down the chapter headings.
Yes. That's how they used to do it.
Have her say them.
Writers don't know how good they have it now.
Well, many more modern, through a modern lens. No, we're just going to talk about how it's funny. But first, maybe you don't remember, for example.
Is it my turn?
It is.
Oh, I'm unprepared. Okay. Let's do it, folks.
You know, maybe you remember the drag and the run by fruiting, but you don't remember... Say the ins and outs of I don't know. Here's Robin. Okay. And go.
All right. So Robin Williams and Sally Field have three kids. He is the fun dad and she is the mean responsible mom. And he throws a rager in their house with ponies. And she says, I want a divorce. So he moves out. And then he's really sad that he's only going to get to see his kids once a week because he needs his kids to be happy. So he decides to have his brother make him an elaborate prosthetic costume and become their nanny, Mrs. Doubtfire. And then he learns how to be an actual functional parent while doing it as Mrs. Doubtfire. And they become a new kind of family unit. And then there's a bunch of sitcom-y Three's Company bullshit that reveals that he has been Mrs. Doubtfire the whole time. And then he becomes Mrs. Doubtfire on TV and they are a functional post-divorce family.
Great.
I got it, right?
Yeah, easily.
That's it, yeah.
Didn't mention Pierce.
Yeah, we didn't get.
Oh, that's fine. He's there.
Stu and handsome. Was not involved.
His name is Stu, which is nice. I had a cat named Stu.
More of a thick soup than a name. One of the good. I want to put on a. Did you just bring out a Funko Pop of Chili from TLC?
Oh my gosh.
You may be wondering why I did that.
I am.
I want to tell you the most interesting thing that I found out about this movie whilst I was Googling it. Because, you know, I didn't really have many notes on it. Yes. On the movie. Where are they now? People asked about this cast.
Yes.
Matthew Lawrence?
Is that the boy?
No.
Is dating Rosanda Chili.
Wow.
From the Chili from TLC.
Okay.
As of like January 2022.
That feels like way out of his league.
Right?
Like way, 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 way out of his league.
I know.
I know he grew up to look pretty hot.
He's all right.
Yeah, but like.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is radio. We just gave each other a look. Right. Like, really?
Right. And like, I tried to like look on both of their Instagrams to see like if there was any cute photos of them together. Like people reported them dating.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like complete bullshit.
Right.
But there's like neither one of them have like a bunch of photos of the other on there. There's like one video that they both posted like on New Year's Eve. One of those, the Take On Me filter with the video. So they had like a little video of them dancing together in onesies. So
hey.
Wow.
Yeah.
She's
like 50 something.
She's notably, if not inappropriately, older than him.
Like
right?
5 years.
I was
like
going to say, he's older than us. Yeah.
Well, now he's.
A little bit.
A little bit. He might be my age.
Okay.
I think Joey is older than me.
They were. TLC was a thing when this movie came out, and he was a child.
Right. He was a teenager.
Okay. Yeah. She also dated Usher for a long time, too, who was significantly younger than her. And that was probably.
Whatever makes you happy. What happened to the older girl?
She doesn't do a lot.
Yeah.
She's a yoga instructor. They said that she still acts, but they didn't give her credits.
We're not going to give you any details on that. Just we assure you, it happens.
Colin was like, "What do I know her from?" I'm like, "She's in Independence Day," and he's like, "No, it's something." I'm like, "Nope, that's what you know her from."
That's funny. Like Dan was like, "What's she doing? She's doing a pretty good job." I was like, "I don't think she's doing anything."
Honestly, I got to say the one of the things that is good in this movie is that they wrote three relatively interesting kid characters who aren't annoying. Yeah. And are distinct characters.
Yeah.
And Mara Wilson is a cultural treasure.
Just a little gemstone.
And yeah.
She's great when she's a child actor, and she's great now
Colin
in the world.
Colin loves her Twitter because for a long time her, like, Twitter display name was Mara I Hate Nazis Wilson or Mara Get Rid of the Nazis Wilson. And Colin also hates Nazis.
Sure.
And so when she showed up on screen, he went, "Oh, Matilda I Hate Nazis." Her professional name.
I think she wrote a memoir about like the sexualization of child actors.
Yeah.
Like she had like quit for a long time because of that.
Yes. Where am I now? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yes. Good.
I know it. Well played.
Yes. Good title.
And let me, because you brought up Harvey Fierstein, I'm sure there are takes that you could take about this movie. Something, something. Are these jokes gendered in the wrong way? Is there some sort of trans insensitivity in some of, listen, Robin Williams riffed and sometimes it hit in different ways than others. That said, I think this is a remarkably important progressive document because I was 8 years old and there was a married quote unquote gay couple in a giant hit mainstream movie just presented as here they are.
Yeah.
I will always remember how funny we all as a society thought Uncle Frank and Aunt Jack was as a line. But the fact that they're even there, you're right, is a meaningful moment. Obviously, there's parts of this movie that I bristle at from like a, you know, is this transphobic perspective.
Like when his son asks him, "You don't like wearing that stuff, do you?"
Right. Yeah. And then there's also those weird 90s things where like the bus driver is like, "I like a Mediterranean woman." Right. Where it's like,
but it's sweet.
Yeah. It's like those things where it's like, is this gross? Is this mean? Is this nice? Is it all of them? I will say what I don't want to do, what we're not going to do today is be like, he's committing so many crimes.
Right.
Because, yes, he is. This is what he does is like morally wrong.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like there is a like Neil deGrasse Tyson-esque propensity for these kind of movies, these like sitcom plot bullshit, to be like, if you think about
this is terrifying.
Right. If you think about this actual sitcom bullshit, this is actually sociopathy, right? And it's like, okay, right, and sound doesn't happen in outer space. Like, let the movie occur.
You know how you know it's a you know, fantasy? The most hyperactive score I've ever heard. Just this twinkly, we might as well be in Narnia with this music. Just to give you a little bit, this is not the real world.
Yes.
This is a happy fantasy place. And speaking of things that were cut, this is a pre-facty. There was a draft of this where they get back together. And somebody,
one of the best things about this movie is that they do not get back together.
Yeah, and somebody said, we should probably teach kids that divorce happens and is okay.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the theme of the movie,
right?
Especially with that ending speech, and that's great.
Which is cheesy as hell and yet works. Yeah. It worked.
You know, I gotta admit that there's something very soothing about Mrs. Doubtfire's voice, yeah. And like that last, I fell asleep, like the last... 5 minutes their monologue. I was like, woke up. Oh, credits. Okay.
Well, she told this girl that her family can still be a family even if her parents get divorced.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
I only exist because of divorce. My mother was married to someone else before my dad. And so I'm always very pro divorce because I owe it my existence. And I do appreciate a pro divorce family comedy.
I'm divorced. Yeah. We didn't have any property or kids together.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, we didn't have property or kids together, so it was real easy peasy. But, you know, had I not done that, I would not have the family that I have today.
Exactly. Divorce is a moral good.
Yeah.
I'm the lazy version of divorced. Disengaged. I got engaged, and then that fell apart, which is much easier.
Yeah.
Then you can just fucking leave, right. And it's over. You
it's
know?
Like a worst case scenario. I was like, fuck, I lost my Xbox in that one.
Yeah.
Which there's, I did, which is, that's a true story.
Yeah. Like there's a chair I really wish I still had, but other than that.
No longer have Rock Band.
Like yeah. There was a really, one of those really nice, I mean, not nice, terrible, like 80s TVs that's like a giant hunk of wood with a TV in it that I left behind just because I was like, on top of everything else, I'm not lifting that thing up again. This is your problem. If I have to leave, then that thing's your problem. Anyway, Mrs. Doubtfire was released on November 24th of 1993, the 27th number one movie of that year. That's Thanksgiving weekend. It won the holiday weekend with $20.4 million, easily beating the debuting Kevin Costner, Clint Eastwood movie, A Perfect World.
No idea.
What?
One of the two of them kidnaps a kid, but then the kid likes the kidnapper. Laura Dern's in it. Probably not something.
Sounds made up.
Yeah. That debuted in third place with $8 million, and we're back. A Dinosaur's Story debuted in seventh place with $3.7 million, easily repeated at number one the following weekend. There were no major new releases. $14.7 million that weekend. Also took the top spot in weekend six over the New Year's holiday, as well as the first weekend of 1994. Actually won another weekend in January 28th. Its 10th weekend. So this won five different weekends.
Wow.
Over the course of a couple months, stayed in the top 12 for 21 weeks April of 1994, finished with $219.1 million, the number two film of 1993 behind only Jurassic Park. That's pretty good. That's better than I thought it did.
Me too.
Just ahead of a former episode subject, The Fugitive. This did better than The Fugitive. Expensive Baubles.
Best Makeup winner.
Yes, won the only Oscar it was nominated for, Best Makeup, and correct. Unlike...
Well, I don't know what else was nominated, but this makeup is very well done.
It's so good.
It won over Philadelphia and Schindler's List.
Oh, yeah, wow, okay. It deserves it.
Yeah. Now, see, listen here, The Whale, current Best Makeup winner. You know what happened here? They put latex and makeup on him.
Yeah.
And he looked like a different person. That counts. Not you were wearing what I wear at the scare house, and then they CGI'd
the edges, makeup
right. onto the.
Oh, yeah. Really? That's what that deal was.
They're trying to act like they did it, but it is. I don't understand, and I feel like the makeup branch is going to have to do some kind of rules. I don't know if it's a rules change or if it's like a culture decision. Like, is this an award for practical effects or is it not? Period.
Yeah.
And that word is makeup and hairstyling.
Correct.
And so if you give it to The Whale, you know, okay, Brendan Fraser had an unflattering hairpiece.
Yeah.
What a Hong Chau and Sadie Sink with their natural hair. We can get to Wakanda forever, but like, how does putting Brendan Fraser in a fat suit and basically nothing else override all of the makeup and all of the hair in Wakanda Forever, or probably any that, what else was nominated?
Anything Everything All at Once also had incredible hair and makeup. Incredible, important to the story hair and makeup.
Yeah. Like that shit was,
I think that actually would have been my vote, which is
We're going through like a million different universes.
Right.
And you have to indicate it on the same heads.
Right.
It's just so funny to me that the makeup category this year was two movies with genuinely incredible hair and makeup, and then three movies with fat suits. And it was like, which fat suit's gonna win?
Come on,
makeup branch. is a sentence that every listener is like, nobody cares. You don't even care. Yes, Mrs. Doubtfire, however, good makeup winner at the Golden Globes. It won Best Musical or Comedy.
Interesting.
Over Dave, Much Ado About Nothing, Sleepless in Seattle, and Strictly Ballroom.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Robin Williams won Best Actor in a Musical Comedy.
Also fair.
Defeating Johnny Depp in Benny and June.
Oh,
Tom Hanks in Sleepless in Seattle. He got another one that night, so...
Yeah, that's fine.
Kevin Kline in Dave, and Colm Meaney in The Snapper.
The what? Okay.
Yeah. By the way, who won Best Actress in a Musical or Comedy that night?
In 1990, for the 1993 Golden Globes?
Mm-hmm.
Was it Meg Ryan?
Angela Bassett. We'll,
you know what?
We'll get back around to it. Hey, let's pay a visit to the MTV Movie Awards. Why don't we?
Oh, hi, our old buddies.
Yeah, Robin Williams lost Best Male Performance to Tom Hanks in Philadelphia. They weren't really MTV-ish yet.
No.
This is the third one. They were kind of just another award show.
I don't know. Maybe, going back to, you know, for 1993, this is really progressive. Like, it was a really, really big deal that Tom Hanks played a guy who's dying of AIDS. Like, that was a huge cultural shift moment that I think MTV wanted to plus one.
Be a part of.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Undoubtedly difficult for Robin Williams to conquer that mountain.
Yeah.
Fortunately, there was the Best Comedic Performance category waiting for him, where he won over Johnny Depp again, Jim Carrey in Ace Ventura, Whoopi Goldberg in Sister Act 2, and Pauly Shore in Son-in-Law.
I would like to revisit some of the old, the 90s MTV Movie Awards.
Yeah. We got it. If you have a video, if you have an old VHS,
I was going to say, I wonder if these are the kind of things that you can find in the depths of YouTube.
Right.
Probably. Yeah.
At least clips, I know. Yeah. I've seen.
It's right there in the opening credits, and yet I did not digest it until Mary Beth pointed out, this is based on a book.
Yeah, I saw that when I was Googling.
Is it like a picture children's book?
No, just a novel.
Okay, novel. For grown-ups?
I think so. Yes, I don't think so.
It's a young adults. I think it's like, I don't know. I would like to think that it's a little darker.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Is as much as I'm like, I don't want to try to make this dark tale of his psychopathy, but it seems like in a book form it really would become that much quicker.
Right.
The 1987 novel Alias Madam Doubtfire by Anne Fine. In fact, all involved writers were women. The screenwriters are two women, Randy Mayhem Singer and Leslie Dixon. One of those, Leslie Dixon.
I was going to say, I know that name.
She wrote Overboard. Uh-huh. She wrote the Thomas Crown Affair remake. She's seasoned big screenwriter. Deal. The novelist, what was her name again? Anne Fine. Her first choice for the part was Warren Beatty.
Okay.
No,
I don't think. And if you think that didn't happen because the producers were like, this can be Robin Williams and nobody else, you'd be wrong. Tim Allen was offered the part. And turned it down and said no. And then they said, okay, do you want to play Stu? And he said no to that as well.
Ew. That wouldn't have worked at all.
No.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Gosh, because the best thing about Stu, even though I snubbed him in my recap, is that he's so handsome and so normal, right? That it's just like, oh, there's your in-your-league boyfriend, right?
let me skip ahead to Letterboxd, because I'm going to forget. There was not really a great Letterboxd list, but there was a great Letterboxd review, the totality of which was, Stu did absolutely nothing wrong.
Exactly.
This is the first time I stepped back and thought, yes, he's polite, he's gentle with her, he's good with the kids. The only, vaguely cross moment is where he's like, ah, the dad's a loser, which is just a true statement.
He is
right?
a loser.
Right.
Yes.
Where's the lie?
He is such a saint.
And that's a good choice. I would not have liked if they were like her skeezy new boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
that's what Tim Allen would have been.
Well, that's what a lot of these types of movies do. They'll like rely on like, oh my God, look, she's choosing the wrong guy. He's
right.
Completely wrong for her. He hates her kids and blah, blah, blah.
So oh, no, he has a showy car.
Also, I love how his car is showy and it just is this little boxy thing. I love how fancy cars from the early 90s look so incredibly unfancy these days.
Sequels have been greenlit twice. The first was in the early 2000s. They never could settle on the script. It was Robin Williams was coming back. Lydia would have been in college and he would have been hanging out in the college town as Mrs. Doubtfire, keeping an eye on her.
With people who grew up watching him on TV, they said he got nationally syndicated. This plot has holes in it, buddy. I'm glad it didn't go.
And someone pointed that out, and it was just dropped. They were about ready to go at the time of William's death.
Oh, shame.
And then said, obviously, never again.
I don't think... this seems like something that you could reboot.
Well... In what is becoming a recurring segment, there's a musical.
There was a Broadway show.
This was crushed by COVID. The Mrs. Doubtfire musical started previews 3 days before COVID.
Oh, damn. Yes.
So did, I think, two previews, disappeared, and came back like on the early side, like came back in summer.
A Tenet and not a Top Gun Maverick.
Right. No, it came back in summer 21 when Broadway was first trying to chug along. And just probably... crumpled under the weight of, you know...
Like 50 people coming to the show.
Right. So it did not run for long. It was not a acclaimed piece of work, but it wasn't panned either. Reviews were mixed. If you'd like, it will be making its Pittsburgh debut next year on the first national tour. I will report back if I'm given a free ticket. Anyway, I'm not going to pay for the Mrs. Doubtfire.
I'm not even sure I'd go for it with a free ticket.
You know, it's nice. You go downtown. It's a nice night.
I don't need a musical version of this.
I am not a musicals person, and I am really not every movie that's ever been made gets a musical version now.
It bugs me.
It bugs me, and like, I hate to, like, I'm okay with franchisey shit, but I'm also like, poor bastards who want to write an original musical.
Right.
Like, can't be done.
Yeah.
Cannot be done.
That's great. I love your idea, but how about Ocean's 11, the musical?
Right. And so, but my friend Jennifer saw Beetlejuice, the musical, and was like, it has nothing to do with the film. And I was like, I wonder if somebody wrote a musical and then, like, pitched it. And they were like, can you make it Beetlejuice, the musical? And they were like, yes. I feel like that's how they're doing it now.
Right. Why is Beetlejuice singing about his long-lost son?
Yeah.
Was this a Frankenstein at one point? Right. And you just changed every use of the word Frankenstein to the word Beetlejuice?
It's like with those movies that became Die Hard movies, but were just written as thrillers. I think that's what's happening with musicals right now.
Well,
I am not a crackpot.
Somebody report back to us.
Yes.
I've only seen a handful of them, and they usually hit like, this is pleasantly entertaining. This is a night out. Mm. And I had a good time without being like, wow, what a time at the theater, you know, or what a work of theater, you know, like Mean Girls is okay.
Right.
You know, you're not going to be angry you saw it, but it's just.
You're not also going to be running out to get the soundtrack.
Right. It's the story of Mean Girls with songs. Like Hairspray is probably the best one I saw, but that was already a good movie musical. Right. So.
Wasn't it already a good stage musical? Wasn't it a stage musical before it was a movie?
Can't remember what order that came in.
Which came first?
I genuinely don't know. I'm not really a musicals person.
Sister Act the musical is fine. What else
that lends itself.
Yeah,
well,
that makes sense. But I've never seen Beetlejuice. I've heard is an exception. I've never seen one that I'm like, this is one of my favorite musicals. No, that has never happened with a movie adaptation. Why are we talking about? We haven't even seen it yet. Check back with me in a year if I go to Mrs. Doubtfire the musical. In the meantime, I am not going to criticize the fact that he probably should have gone to jail in the real world, as you said.
Yeah.
I will criticize several convenient writing shortcuts. For example, showing up to pick up your children at 6 p.m. on a Saturday night and saying, I have to go to the bank.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, you don't.
Yeah. What bank?
What bank? What newspaper office has Saturday night hours?
Also, you know how many times they read aloud to you what they're going to print in the newspaper? There's no, like, I'm going to drop off my form that's been forged, right? It's that did not make sense to me.
Or I will order the jambalaya not spicy, a thing no one has ever ordered wild.
Right. How, sir?
Yeah.
How
allergic is that? Pepper.
So you want a plate of rice and shrimp, just plain shrimp and some rice.
Because I was like, I'm pretty sure jambalaya is...
Even if you made a mild jambalaya, it begins with pepper. Yeah. I'm allergic to pepper. I will have a jambalaya, please.
So you should order something else.
Yes.
But one of my favorite moments is, I think all of this is in a mostly unspoken 4-second shot where Robin Williams says, sorry about the pepper. Mm. Pierce Brosnan processes the fact that he's been poisoned, thinks about it, reflects on the fact that he would be dead if not for an incredibly vigorous Heimlich maneuver, calls it a wash in his head, and like fist pumps him for a second.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's just like, what brilliant compact storytelling. Like,
yes.
Appreciate it. We didn't have to linger. One of my favorite things in this entire thing was Shelley Field's reaction to finding out that he was Mrs. Doubtfire.
The whole time.
Yes.
Like that, that plays in my head in a loop whenever I find things out that I wish I knew earlier.
Oh my God. Oh my God. The whole time.
Yeah. That shit is like pure comedic gold. Yes.
She is great. Sally Field is a national treasure.
Yes.
I really was struggling with the dinner scene. I was like hitting my limit of sitcom-y bullshit.
The back and forth.
I really was struggling with it.
I buy it with Mrs. Selner in the apartment.
You
weren't counting on this.
Right.
You figure if I can just get through the initial conversation, then I could be like, oh, she hopped in the show. What she says.
Right.
I buy it. You showed up to dinner planning to put on and take off an entire outfit repeatedly over the course of a couple hours. Something that is so unrealistic that they had to subtly speed up the getting changed scene to try to convince the audience that this didn't take 12 minutes.
Exactly. Like, I was confused as how is he reapplying this mask?
Yeah.
Like, that's not an easy task for him to do by himself.
No. Just... And clearly got there in the end with he just shows up as Mrs. Doubtfire. They should have had him do that from the beginning.
Just had that idea earlier.
Right.
There's a lot of ideas he doesn't have until the last minute.
Yes.
Like objecting to the cigarette smoking thing in the cartoon. You couldn't have had this crisis before you showed up.
Make it appear as though he is doing his final recording and his table read all at once.
Yes.
With this might be an incredibly low budget show. So maybe.
If so, they're lucky he knew how to sing opera before he showed up.
Absolutely.
She is pretty good. Does a pretty good job.
I really like the idea of showing up to an unemployment office and saying, I do voices.
That was a lovely little montage.
Do you have any special skills?
Oh, yes, I do. I do voices.
What do you mean, you do voices?
Well, I do voices.
Yes!
We've come to this planet looking for intelligent life. Oops, we made a mistake.
We're happy to be in America. Don't ask for a green card.
I want you in the worst way.
Well, this is certainly a rough meeting, and it's not going very well for me, I'll tell you that. Hey, boss, give it a chance. She's going to loosen up any moment.
Look at me right now, Moneypenny. I want to undo that bow and get to know you.
I'm crazy to make a deal with you.
Nancy and I are still looking for the other half of my head.
Idiot! You're doing it! I'm sitting on a gold mine!
Don't make me smack you, sweetheart. I'll do it. I do a great impression of a hot dog.
I think that's the best scene in the movie.
Interesting.
Because the best individual bit in the movie, let's see. Because it is the one time all throughout you're getting these little peppers of, oh, he's improvising now.
Yeah.
Oh, and famously, there's 7 hours of footage on this movie because he just kept riffing.
Right.
And much of it could not be used. But in that one, there is a perfect excuse for him to just...
be gone.
Just go for a while. And the reaction is so good. Like, her deadpan, completely unimpressed, is so good.
Yeah.
Which is like, you think you're funny. He's like, well, I did before this meeting.
I used to.
Like, I know that he's not even a deadbeat dad, just an irresponsible father. But when she comes to pick the kids up after he's cleaned the house or whatever, yeah. And she's like so impressed and oh my god, we're so proud of you and oh blah blah. Like he wasn't a drug addict,
right?
Like he was just a little unkempt. Yeah. I mean, not unvalidating her reasons for a divorce, but it's just also like let's not just bring out the parade for him because yes. he fucking put some shit away.
Yes,
and bought a stereo. Like yeah, it was just a little much.
And bought a stereo. I do like how this movie subtly implies that in order to learn how to cook and clean, he had to embrace femininity.
put on a whole ass bodysuit right. and become a woman.
Carrying around boobs somehow gave him the patience to cook.
Right. So where was this drive before when, you know, your poor wife was struggling while you were married? And
he didn't understand how heavy tits are and how uncomfortable heels are.
It's like, you know, how are you not catching your tits on fire every time? Yes. Cook, darling.
Honestly, watching this was proud of myself for having yet to catch my tits on fire. Touch wood.
It seems like, well, then again, who actually leans over
that
a stove?
Right, that far over.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think you need to actually step into the pot.
Having seen this many, many times, if you grew up with this and haven't sat down and watched it, I recommend that you do, because the number of jokes I got for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Staggering. When he has the, like, 2 minutes of so are you fucking her
yeah.
references, I was like, I heard that when I was 8? And everyone and my parents probably just checked in to make sure I wasn't registering what was being said, and then we all moved on.
I thought it was like bravo to Pierce Brosnan, because I just imagine like how difficult it must have been for him to keep a straight face throughout this whole that whole thing.
It was close up. I was like an hour later, did they just take some footage of him sitting neutrally and splice it in over all the times he was laughing?
But, like, there's no way he couldn't have broken character.
He's really good. Everyone in this is very good.
Yeah.
It is a stacked cast of people performing very, very well. To this day, I feel bad for the old boring TV host. Poor guy.
At least he had like a nice little guest spot on
the
news.
He could get a job at a museum or something.
I still don't know if that really would have worked, though. Like, Mrs. Doubtfire.
As a TV show?
Yeah.
It depends on the segments.
I guess.
If it's just her sitting reading letters to kids being like, it's okay for your parents to get divorced. Like you said, that's sleepy making. But I guess also TV nap time might be a valuable product for a certain demographic of parents.
Yeah, it works.
Anything else you want to cover about Mrs. Doubtfire?
I mean, I was surprised at how much it still held up and held my attention.
Yeah.
After all this time.
Yeah.
And also, it was also, I guess, even though Robin Williams did his thing, did his shticky, his off the rails bit, it was still like reined in. It was well enough. It wasn't where you didn't get the idea that he was on a coke binge.
Right. I mean, this is really like prime time for Robin Williams being in control of his instrument.
Yeah.
In both the coked up side of him and the actual genuinely good dramatic actor side of him. Right. So peak Robin Williams.
Yeah, I do feel like, though, it was kind of, I feel like it was a little hollow, his reasonings for wanting to do, like, I mean,
it's super goofy. It doesn't.
I can't live without my kids.
Like, right? Yeah, then you should have been a better partner.
Yeah, like, I don't, and it's just, I don't know, just, it feels a little really, like, codependent.
Yes, and also, like, I guess this is a long time ago, but even with him being, like, maybe things were so much different. It realistically, he'd get more than once a week.
Yeah.
Visitation. Like, I don't see being as much of a loser in air quotes as he is.
But even then, there was no reasoning for him not to have gotten like a decent visitation thing, unless he just fought like super hard to. Was he like had a public defender? Like, I don't know. Like,
well, eventually he fires his attorney. But they did really obnoxious the casting on her. Divorce attorney, just this like grade A bitch who doesn't speak and just smirks, right? Like, all of my internalized misogyny laser focused on that blonde divorce lawyer there. Ugh, they did it.
I do think Chris Columbus, I think, is a very limited director.
The thing that he knows how to do, he knows how to do.
He is so.
Knew how to do? Did he die?
No, he's around.
Okay.
He is so at home in family dramedy that is very engaging and a little more sentimental than it ought to be.
Yeah.
But Home Alone, Mrs. Doubtfire, the first two Harry Potters. Like, yeah. When you put him in that, he's like, yep, check. And it really works. It's a little, that score, man. It's a little cloying, but maybe it's because I grew up with it. It just works for me. Just makes me happy like a warm hug. And that's why I give it 81 points.
I'm going to go 69.
Wow.
Nice.
I gave it 83.
Oh my goodness, I feel like such a grump right now.
You like what you like.
Yeah.
You don't.
I just got really tired of the slapsticky bullshit. But like we said, all the performances are as good as they can get.
For every moment in the restaurant where I'm like, come on, there's just a little turn of phrase somewhere else in the film that I'm... the failed makeup collections montage.
Yes. Oh God, matchmaker, make me a match. Like that was adorable. And I love Harvey anyway.
Me
all
too.
The time.
Also, I do really love the idea of being like, oh, my brother makes prosthetics.
Right. Yes.
Like a form, a plot, a hatching in my mind. Yeah, I love it.
How lucky am I?
Yep.
That's 77 2/3. Very solid score for Mrs. Doubt. Fire. We didn't play the trailer.
Hello, I'm Euphigenia Doubtfire, dear.
Bon appetit!
It's homework time.
You can't imagine what it was like being married to Daniel.
He sounds like an absolute stallion.
Robin Williams, a man who'd do anything.
Back off!
Got a time here.
To see his kids.
Oh!
Mrs. Doubtfire.
My first day as a woman, I'm getting hot flashes.
If anything, that doesn't really sell it.
I know. A lot of the takes that they didn't use were in the trailer. Yeah.
I was really surprised at how low energy the trailer is. Right. I feel like that's the best way that I can describe it.
Yes, I was expected to be like, Robin Williams in your face, No, just kind of like...
I don't know what... Your theory is that they didn't have all the takes in the can yet, or that they...
No, I feel like I learned way back in my day that there was a time when movie trailers were made... They weren't allowed to use takes that were in the movie. They really tried not to use takes that were in that movie.
Got it.
So that just could have been like, I could be remembering this wrong.
Right.
But yeah, that's kind of what I think. Because like a lot of the stuff, like there's the scene is there and it's in the movie, but it was not that take. It
wasn't the right one.
Right.
My guess is this was Jim Carrey had arrived in the world. Pauly Shore was around. They were trying to say, this isn't wacky bullshit. This is
heartwarming.
This is a four-quadrant family comedy.
Except for it is wacky bullshit.
Right. Yeah. But they didn't want people to go, oh, this is just Robin Williams trying to do Encino Man and dressing up like a lady for some wacky antics. This is, you know, a movie you should take your family to over Thanksgiving weekend.
And I guess that worked, right?
Like oh, it you absolutely said.
Yeah.
So,
they know
it.
More than us.
Mm-hmm. To the bingo card, what do you got?
I am going to make an argument for an ex shows up. I feel like...
Well, he sure does.
Stu is canonically her ex.
And the rest of the movie is about her ex-husband, Williams, showing up over and over again.
That makes sense.
That's what I was thinking of.
All right. So, yeah, I don't even need to make my... We're for sure that they dated in college.
Right.
Okay, good.
Does someone work from home?
Doesn't his brother?
Yes.
Yes!
Sure does.
Did any of these kids throw a tantrum?
I wouldn't
Not
call
really.
Tantrum.
Yeah.
It had some little shitty side eyes, but.
Do we count underwater shot for that, the remote sinking into the.
No.
No, I don't think
so. Right. It's very memorable. The little bubbles come out of the top.
Just even the fact that he.
But it's the camera's not underwater.
That's true. That's true.
That's the line I'm going to draw there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Audio recorder could be.
Audio recorder for the voiceover work at the beginning.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's not what I envisioned, but I will take that. That's all we got.
All right.
That's a lot.
No trains.
Here. That train Trolley. Square is going to, we're not going to watch another movie with a train.
And as soon as I get rid of it, we're going to end up with strangers on a train. It's going to be
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which is the lightest on trains.
I was
going to
say, I don't really remember the train content. I know it must be in there.
No, he gets on I just bought the 4K.
Oh.
Because.
You need to see every pixel of those trains.
It's actually interesting, if only to me. I guess this kicks off You Can't Handle the Truth. That is, if you're a giant fan of Planes, Trains, Automobiles, which I am, it's on my Letterboxd 4. That is, you know, the comedy nerds release the Snyder Cut. Because...
Oh, that's right.
John Hughes' method was to film forever.
Right.
And then decide what made
was
the
a
most
movie.
Sense.
Right.
So when they first assembled the scenes of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles in order, it was 3.5 hours of it. And they put it on VHS tapes so John Hughes could go home and review it and decide what he wanted to be in the movie. And until, like, October of last year, no one had ever seen any of that. Every previous version of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles had one deleted scene that was about 5 minutes long. And the script has leaked over the years, and there's all of this fascinating stuff that's,
it's like sad, right?
And the sad stuff didn't make it. All of which is to say, now that on this 4K release, someone finally went into John Hughes's old stuff and found about 1.5 hours of that footage.
Of VHS?
VHS quality on a 4K disc. and released it for the first time.
Cool.
It doesn't have everything I wanted because I know about... Mostly the stuff that's missing is one subplot that explains a lot of the movie. And then all of this detail about John Candy talking about how his life went wrong and why he's homeless now and all of this. That's still not in there. But there is still more than 1 hour of extra movie that's really good and is John Candy and Steve Martin being really funny.
Right.
And no one saw for like 37 years.
That's cool. Wow.
It's very, very cool. I recommend if you're a big fan like me. But what a silly way to start You Can't Handle the Truth when there's so much going on in the world. Camila, what movie do we love now?
Oh my goodness gracious. Creed 3.
Oh my God.
Well, something called Creed 3.
It's so good.
I can't even, like, I was just like in the theater, just like, and the other two, yes, already up there for one and two. I was like, yes, this is amazing. But this one, like, congratulations, Michael B. Jordan, for his directorial debut.
It's his first movie.
Like, fuck me. Like, you sir, have been paying attention to Ryan Coogler and everybody else who has directed him. And just like, there was a moment where in the film where I was like, oh, this is where you're going to lose me. But then he grabbed me back. I was like, no, don't go yet. We're still here. Like, hold on. And he embraced me. And it was like, oh, I get it now. I know what you're doing. I like it. We're back on the ride.
Yay!
And even the final fight, I didn't know who I was rooting for.
Oh, like, that's the best feeling.
Like, I don't even know who I want to win this thing.
I think I was rooting for Dame.
I think I was too.
Yeah. You know.
Fucking Jonathan Majors. Like.
Oh my God.
Like, I've seen this man in like only half a handful of other roles. But enough to know that he was acting his ass off in this one. Like, he put on a whole different persona. And I'm like, this is, he's just amazing. Like, you can't take your eyes off him and you want more of his backstory. It's like, I want Creed 4, Dame story is what I want. Dame story.
Well, especially when you didn't see Ant-Man.
No.
He was just there and he was like, now I will villain as Thanos but better, and did it. God. And then it's like, oh, I have to be a different kind of villain in 2 weeks. No problem. Completely different character, completely different ways of getting that.
Yes.
Those hooks into you and hooks into the protagonist. It's Shakespearean, this drama. I gave it a 9 and I flirted with 10. The only criticism I would have in Michael B. Jordan's directorial debut, there's a few of those like new director where I'm like,
relax,
you're reaching a little bit. When he makes the crowd disappear and puts an imaginary cage around the ring, it's like, okay, let's talk about implied metaphors versus visual metaphors.
And that's what I was talking about when I said, like, there was the moment where he almost lost me, but after a while it was like, I get it.
I would see it again.
I would have sat, like, had I had the time in it, I'm like, roll again. Let's roll.
Do I need to watch Creed 2 before I watch Creed 3?
No.
I should
really
watch Creed 2. I understand, but like,
you don't have to to understand this.
Yeah, great. Because I want to see this a lot, and I'd like to see it in the theater, but there's no way that I'm going to watch two of these.
I couldn't tell you what happened in Creed. I mean, if I really sat down and thought about it, I might be able to get around to what happened in Creed 2. It has no bearing on the plot of Creed 3, really.
That's what I thought. Great. Yeah.
And also, just even the, Like, not to mention that story with Creed and Dame, but like the story of his family and to watch him grow up into this father. It's, and you know, and he's, they're doing ASL throughout the film and and then to like kind of foreshadow where his daughter might be going. Like, it's just, it's all very beautiful, and it was like exciting and heartwarming and, you know, the same, like horny, and this, like, it's all the same time. Yeah. Like, it's just this great big package of like, here, like, this is our present for you. Like, find another movie that's going to be better, released in 2023 this year. I don't know. This is my number one for 2023.
Strong start.
Strong start.
As soon as the weather gets better, I am going to the drive-in, because I would see Creed 3 again. I would see Scream 6 again, put a pin in it, and I'm not reviewing this weekend. I'm not doing any reviews this weekend. And both Shazam and Adam Driver Fights the Dinosaurs are coming out.
Adam Driver Fights the Dinosaurs.
I'm headed for the drive-in.
Yeah.
Okay, so like, just to complete my list really quickly, I don't think I talked about Magic Mike's Last Dance. I think I kind of skipped over that before. It's fine. I realize I don't like male strippers. I like Channing Tatum as a male stripper.
Yes.
That's kind of where it is. And that's what this movie was lacking.
I see.
So, like, he had, like, two decent numbers.
Oh, and that rain number, though.
Yeah, that was dope. Like, I, that was that was amazing.
I was like, no, nobody look at me for a while. I'm
gonna need a minute. Yeah, so, I mean, it was fine. The where it went, it was just very, what I imagine, I guess, the Magic Mike Vegas residency was like. Just a bunch of, like, Chippendale type cheese ball. Yeah, we're gyrating in your face. Retreat, which was an older film from 2011 with Tandy. What is her?
Tandy Way?
Yes.
Tandy Way Newton?
Yes, and Cillian Murphy. Very kind of like a, what is the movie with Nicole Kidman and Billy Zane? Dead Calm.
Oh, yeah.
But like in a cabin in Ireland somewhere on an island or something, this couple goes off to reconnect their love life together, blah, blah, blah.
They retreat.
Yes, they retreat. And then they get accosted by this dude who comes in and tells them that there is a virus out in the world killing people, and he barricades them all in this house.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, this was 2011.
Yikes.
That this came out. This is has some of the most exaggerated death scenes I've ever seen.
In a good way? No. Exaggerated is a weird word to use there.
Like, it's just like, it's, or maybe elongated.
Okay.
Extended, just like, you find yourself, they want you to feel, and like maybe 7 minutes into this person dying, like you're feeling it, and then it just gets to a, that, and then you're just like, convulsing to laughter. It's crazy. And Missing. I finally saw Missing. Which I really enjoyed.
Oh, right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm like 1982 Best Picture nominee starring Jack Lemmon and Sissy Spacek Missing? No.
No.
Oh, with the
Storm. Storm Reid, is that her name? And yeah. Nia Long.
Yeah.
Right. We were just talking about Nia Long deserves better, and you said she was pretty good at Missing, etc.
Right. That even though she was also not really on screen as often in this one either.
For the nature of the format.
Right.
Yes. But she is missing.
Yes. But it has a couple of good twists in there.
Yeah. And
I enjoy this inventive little, this way that they tell the story now, like with Searching and like those other ones that they've been doing, like everything's on a screen. So
I don't actually think I've seen any of these yet.
This is probably the entry point, because it's not gross. It's not too, like, crazy making with the moving windows and tabs. This one posits that this girl just leaves a forward-facing camera on her laptop open at all times.
Yeah, that's
so it's a little easier to get in.
Yeah, I was confused. Like, is that what kids do?
No.
Okay.
That's what this kid does.
Okay.
Which was very convenient for the film.
I'll allow it.
Yeah.
That sounds like a helpful hack.
Robin,
I
watched all those Oscar movies.
Wrapped up. I won the Oscars Death Race this year.
Yeah, yes. Congratulations.
Thank you. So that means I watched a lot of bullshit since we last met, and I'm not going to talk about all of it.
All 2.5 hours of Bardo?
Bardo is so dumb. No, but I do want to talk about two of my favorites. One is, After Sun, which Paul Mescal was nominated for Best Actor. I'm not going to talk about it too much because I will start crying.
Oh, dear.
I cried so hard I woke up Colin from upstairs. And when I say this, I feel like I'm telling people, like, people are going to be like, oh God, like, does something tragic happen? Like, No, it's not that kind of sad movie. It's the kind of sad movie where you're like, oh wow, existence is incredibly difficult. and like, no matter how much we love someone doesn't mean that we can make their life okay.
Wow.
Right? Like, and it's just like, oh, I'm gonna cry, I can't talk about it anymore. Okay, moving on. Moving on.
Talk about how something was bad. Talk about how some pretentious bullshit was bad.
Most of the things I watched towards the end were pretty good. All the Beauty and the Bloodshed was the other one I want to talk about. That was nominated for Best Documentary Feature, and it is so good. And I think it's going to be on HBO relatively soon. So this is one of those things where, like, keep your eye out for it. And when it shows up on whatever streaming it shows up on, watch it. It's just so good. It's one of those movies where it's like, what is it about? What isn't it about? You know what I mean? Like, I guess you can say, this is a documentary about the artist Nan Golden. You can say, this is a documentary about the art world protesting against the Sackler family. This is a documentary about the opioid crisis. This is a documentary about the art scene in New York in the 80s, right? Like, yeah. I think it might be the best of all of the nominated movies. I was a huge, huge fan of it, and I highly recommend it. And I also enjoyed Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris, which
a
I think
nice
is,
lady gets a nice dress.
Yes, it is the absolute fluff kind of movie. If you're looking for something to watch with your mom, that's probably the one. And Isabelle Huppert is mean, and then she's mean for a reason, everyone.
Yeah.
And I love that in a movie. Unlike in EO, where she's just mean.
We don't need to do a full Oscars postmortem because, one, this is coming out 9 days later, so
no one cares
in the term in to the general public 10 years later. Two, the general reaction was pretty good Oscars.
Yes,
most things.
If you're gonna
fine.
Have an Oscars where Angela Bassett loses and I still like it, that was the one it would be.
I wanted to see if you wanted to open the Angela Bassett roundtable because on Sunday night you said save it for the pod. So
Sean and I started, and he said, when you have backup. Basically, he was like making me argue in favor of why Angela Bassett is more deserving of a Lifetime Achievement Award, in air quotes, Best Supporting Actress win over Jamie Lee Curtis. And I was like, I think that is self-evident. And he clearly doesn't. I'm like, I don't even know if I could argue. Like, it to me, that is so undeniably true.
No.
That if you had to choose between the two, one is more deserving.
I would say they both are more deserving of We Love You, Here's an Oscar
right.
for the thing you did. They both are.
Yes.
Right? So.
But only one of them was famously incredibly brutally snubbed by the Academy multiple times.
I think you can make that argument, or you can make my very gentle argument, which is in that they are both deserving and were both nominated. Maybe we go back to, wait, what is the movie we're talking about and what did you do in it?
And because then I still think Angela Bassett wins by a lot.
I think if anybody was going to win from Everything Everywhere, it should have been Stephanie.
Yeah, she was nominated.
Yeah, like yeah. It should have been her. Like, Jamie was good in that movie.
Yeah.
But I think that little girl pulled off a better, she did more work than Jamie had to do in that movie. I mean, we already know like where I stand with Angela's concern.
And I'm the guy that owns a $150 Haddonfield hoodie. But to me, Angela Bassett was fantastic in Wakanda Forever.
Yeah.
In the 8 to 10 minutes she was in Wakanda Forever doing anything.
That's clearly not a problem for in the supporting
I know
category.
That's clearly not. But give everyone in Everything Everywhere an Oscar. You gave three of them an Oscar.
I know.
But the range between a hilarious yet hateable villain who justifiably comes around to support the protagonist by the end of the thing, and the heartbreaking hot dog fingers scenes. I'm like, yeah, you can have an Oscar for this.
Okay. No, I'm not going to be mad at Jamie Lee Curtis for the rest of my life, the way that I was preparing to have a lifelong vendetta against Kerry Condon. So, like, good.
Yeah.
But Angela Bassett deserves an Oscar.
You know, I just think, you know, this whole fucking thing that would have been fine if they had just given it to her for What's Love Got to Do with
exactly.
It.
Right.
Like
exactly.
Way back when it should have happened.
The first Oscars I ever watched, she should have walked away with an Oscar. All of this would have been not a
right.
problem.
Exactly. Right. And you know, and I'm not mad at Jamie Lee for, like, you know, Jamie Lee has put in the work. Sure, give her mm-hmm. an Oscar, I'm yeah. fine. You know, and I'm not even the whole thing is just fucking shitty. Like, the Oscars are officially dead to me. Like, you had one chance to bring me back.
No one has died to you more than the Oscars. This is like round 12.
Right. An hour later, they gave Brendan Fraser an
Oscar.
Which,
you know,
yeah.
And I thought it was cute that you thought I was up at like midnight to text me.
I texted Camila, turn on your TV.
I saw that like 7 a.m. the next day. I was like, oh, Robin, bless you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I'm glad that, and the little boy is a grown man.
The 51-year-old little boy.
Right. I'm glad he got his Oscar.
Me too. That was very sweet.
Super sweet. And Michelle Yao.
Yeah. Look, it was a good Oscars. It was good Oscars. And also, I am still blown away with how I ended up being happy about Brendan Fraser winning an Oscar for The Whale. Like,
he's just likable.
Yeah, you just want nice things for him.
I want nice things for him, and then it really was coming down to him versus Austin Butler, right? Yeah. Like, if Colin Farrell had stayed in it, I would have been like, give it to Colin Farrell.
Yeah. Right.
But Colin Farrell also wore a fat suit last year.
That's right.
And I just, the idea of Austin Butler having won for Elvis just couldn't sit right with me in a way that Brendan Fraser winning for The Whale, even though I thought that movie was a garbo, I does sit right with me. That's the kind of garbo that the Oscars is on record liking. So let Brendan Fraser have an Oscar. The end.
Especially, like, we gave Elton John Kid the Oscar. We gave Freddie Mercury Kid the Oscar. Right. We're taking this
Elton
one off.
Elton John Kid did not get an Oscar.
He didn't get the Oscar?
He didn't even get nominated.
Oh,
yes.
Really?
Yes. Which,
did he get a Golden Globe?
He did. I don't know.
That's insane.
Yeah. Huh. Like,
well, we gave Rami Malek the Oscar for standing there.
Yeah.
With too many teeth in his head.
Which reminds me, and it's really apropos of nothing, but other than I saw a clip about a woman who is the one who teaches these actors how to be these people that they're portraying.
Oh, interesting.
Which is a job I never thought about ever.
So she's like biopic coach?
Yeah.
Oh, what's her name? Do you know?
I forget. And that was what really pissed me off. Yeah. Was like, it was a segment on the Today Show and they did not say her name nearly enough. I think they said it one time and it wasn't in the crawl or anything at the bottom, but like, yeah. And
she tells them, like, find out, let me know.
Yeah, I'm going to have to Google.
I want to watch this. It's interesting.
Because like she talks about, like, she gives them reasons why they act the way they act. Mm-hmm. Like more, it gets deep into psychology. Like, that shit.
What's your motivation?
Right, yeah.
When I was in college, the grad student first year theater, like about the first thing they had graduate theater students do was prepare a like little review called Rockstar, where they had to, you know, do it's drag essentially, uh-huh. like fully embody in that way. And they put on a show at the end, and it's like, today you're gonna see Elvis and da 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 and James Brown and da da da. And it was the most entertaining thing
that in sounds
the world.
Really
because,
cool,
like,
right?
When and that's why they keep getting Oscars or nominated for Oscars, because when you very convincingly play a rock musician, right. It's very entertaining.
Right.
But I'm very glad you didn't win the Oscar.
Did anyone do the math yet as for how long has it been since there was a year like this where no one won for paying a real person?
Oh, wow.
I had no idea that was a
good. Well, three of them went to Everything Everywhere and the other went to The Whale.
I'm sure it's a really long time.
It's probably a very long time. Maybe you know this. Obviously, there's plenty of times where something won 7 or more Oscars.
Yeah.
How often can that be picture, director, a screenplay Oscar, 3 acting Oscars, and editing in there?
It might be one of the biggest, like, point value sweeps ever.
Yeah, it really is. We're going long, so I'll try to keep these 3 things I have to talk about relatively short. Scream 6 is worth seeing if you like Screams.
I totally want to see it.
Okay, I saw a tweet that was like, hey, the people who made Scream 6 know that the lights don't flash on the subway anymore. And I want to say, the lights don't flash on the subway anymore?
Right.
When
like,
did
wow.
they fix that?
It's like, wait, what an upgrade.
Thank you for letting us know.
And then I was like, what is the last time I was on the subway? 2004, maybe.
I felt bad because I'm like, oh, it's been 5 years. Or
oh,
something.
I I don't know the last time I've been on the subway.
I guess they did in Flash. Yeah, that sounds right. You know, maybe because who cares? It was very dramatic.
Sure.
And maybe because filmed entirely in Montreal, this Scream Goes to New York is actually in Canada.
That's
but
hilarious.
It's not one of the best Scream movies, I guess, but you put it in a new location so you can do some different things. You did enough to make me care about the kids from the last movie. It's mostly about the kids from the last movie.
Which is going to say a lot if that happens for me.
Like, sure.
I mean, I sort of kind of already care about the twins, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's them and the main two girls. Yeah.
Which I found out the boy is Cuba Gooding Jr.'s son. What? Mm.
Cuba Jr. Jr.?
Yes.
Mm. Is he named Cuba?
No.
No.
Oh, okay. Is
Omar Gooding?
No, that's his brother.
His brother is Omar Gooding? Mm. Who's this one?
Wild and Crazy Kids.
I don't know. Joe Gooding? I have no idea.
Anyway, and they drop enough little, like, didn't see that Cummins in the first half that I'm like, you're freshening it up. The back half, not freshening it up. Yeah. This starts a lot stronger than it finishes, but go in just wanting one Scream, please,
right,
and you'll be absolutely fine.
I would like a new Scream movie.
Okay. They make a big deal out of when they're trying to figure out who the killer is, because it's a Scream movie, they're like, this will be the 10th Ghostface.
Wow.
And poor Courtney Cox. If 10 people have tried to kill you.
Right.
They're probably right. Let them go.
Right.
It's got to be ready to get out of there by now. Because this is the one. And in case you're wondering, because I had it in the back of my head, maybe, no, the Neve Campbell isn't in this one. Was not an elaborate ruse. Neve Campbell is not in this one.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Because I got to say.
I mean, they clearly like dropped enough little, like, did anyone talk to Sydney? Like, they're like, we'll pay her more next year. But
they had some nerve trying to not pay her what she was worth.
Right?
Like, come on now.
Speaking of horror franchises, oh, poor, poor Children of the Corn. You tried. It
didn't.
I can't
believe there was another one.
Well, I realized
this is a reboot.
Yeah, this is a soft reboot. When I first looked it up, like on Letterboxd, it's 2020. It's Children of the Corn 2020, even though it came out a week ago, because they premiered it in Children in 2020, and all of the studios looked at it and said, nah, we're good, and walked away for 2.5 years before someone finally came. You know, they start out right at the beginning. I was like, oh, I see, because they're playing a lot with this, like, not Rust Belt because it's agricultural, but this like small town decay, and the theme running through it is that this place has been abandoned and the town is dying, and then everybody talks about that out loud over and over again for 90 minutes. It's like, you don't, a theme doesn't mean it's the only thing you ever say. Also, mild spoilers, if you can't afford a good dumb CGI corn monster, don't put in the dumb CGI corn monster.
Oh, corn, man. Like the plant?
It's a big old...
Or the band.
It looks like... Do you remember when we watched Fantastic Beasts and there was that little green stick-looking
kind of
thing?
Yeah.
That, but 10 feet tall and eating people.
What I meant by the plant was it's not like it's a monster made out of kernels of corn.
No,
it's
no,
a monster
no,
made
it's
out
a
of
corn
plant
stalks.
Corn.
Yes.
Because what I imagined was a giant Corn on the Cob.
Would have been better. That's very, very bad. I like a movie called The Outwaters. This is a tiny, this is like a $15,000 budget found footage horror movie.
Outwaters?
The Outwaters. Mm-hmm. You know, some dumb artsy 20-somethings go into the goddamn desert to make a music video.
Dumbasses.
This is what happens.
That's how they do it.
This is good for me and not that many other people because I like how aggressive it is toward the audience. There are 45 full minutes that are deliberately dull. Just, we're hanging out with these a-holes on their camping trip. And then, all at once, we pass into Lovecraftian cosmic horror, reality is breaking. And when reality is broken, for the most of the rest of the movie, he has one little half-assed flashlight beam darting around the screen. And sometimes you can see, it's a tent full of blood. Oh, now it's some kind of monster creature. Oh, there's yourself 2 days ago wandering away from you. Like, and you can barely see any of it. That last 45 minutes, 50 minutes is mostly sound and occasional flashes of light. Huh. Part of why I'm praising it so much is that the film had a really nice tweet about my review, and one of the actors had a really nice tweet about my review. Mm. And it was the actor that played the mom. Thanks. Aww. Thanks, Outwaters mom. In the tweet they made with a quote from my review, they had the quote, and there's one reply, and the one reply that is, "You should be ashamed of yourself for making this trash. Everyone walked out of the theater. This isn't even a movie. It's just nothing." And I'm like, yes, correct.
What?
So this is for the tiniest scrap of the movie going public, which happens to include me, and I was very impressed with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's if you thought Blair Witch was too logical and easy to see, this is the movie you. So we ought to draw a movie.
Let's do it. As discussed, we have many vetoes.
Oh yeah, we don't have to watch anything. We even mild disinterest, even just like, no, I'm not really
not on the mood.
Except for remember that's always setting us up for the worst turn.
Well, we've done this once before, and if we stick with it, it'll get you warmed up for one of the summer's big releases. How do you feel about watching The Fate of the Furious?
Which one is that?
I think
Charlize.
I think eight. The yes. Fate of the Furious.
This is when my girl Charlize comes in. I will not be vetoing any Charlize Theron property, although I will not be bummed if someone else chooses to veto this because, like I said, I've seen it before. We will be crossing off the one of us has previously podcasted about it if we do.
Nice. I don't mind. It's...
Will that give me a bingo? It would give me a bingo.
All right. So, right. Are you
Spoilers.
Going to...
Do you want to
spend your veto or do you want to gain a
minus
veto?
One veto right. or plus one veto?
Yeah.
I'm not going to stop us. If I did, it would solely be like, that's not really what I want to watch today.
Yes.
But
We're gonna have to pay for it.
Okay, it's fine. It's fine. Maybe this is. That's always the box set that I'm like, oh, no, there's no reason for me to own that. Like, you could get like a 9 Fasts box set for like $40 because everyone's like, do I need it?
Right.
No, after everything after, which one did The Rock show up in? 5?
I have no idea.
Everything after The Rock showed up, I walked out of there going like, I think I love the Fast and the Furious franchise now. But what will be interesting is the one time I tested this late COVID one, Fast 9, Fast 10.
F9.
F9 was
I think
in...
that this one is.
F8.
Well, this one is The Fate of the Furious. Then there's F9. And then the one that's coming this year is Fast 10, Your Seatbelts. I don't know what it's actually called.
But I
see what they did there with the Fast 8.
Yeah.
Fast 8, Fate.
F9, I saw twice because a drive-in was closing. And I was like, I just have to be there on the way out. I've already seen this. I'll see it again. And that taught me that these are one-time watches. Like,
yeah.
The first time you're like, wow! And then when you've lost that wow factor, it's like...
They're in space?
So we'll see how that goes. The Fate of the Furious.
This will be the second one that we've done, yeah?
We did the first, the original.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
We skipped those 6 in the middle. Man, they've made a lot of these.
So many.
Yeah. Before we get to that, Mrs. Doubtfire, released November 24th, 1993. What was the number one song in America?
Mariah Carey.
No. A hint that won't help is that I just bought the best of this artist for $5.
Aerosmith. And
I would not buy that.
Yeah, as established.
Not a fan.
Sean deeply hates Aerosmith.
For $5.
I want to defend Aerosmith, which feels weird. This song is terrible, though. Janet Jackson.
No.
I would be upset. If you bought the best of Janet Jackson for $5.
It's worth much more than that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Also, the thing about the best of Janet Jackson is that like both Control and Rhythm Nation and Janet, period, all function as the best of Janet Jackson.
Yeah,
that's true.
But then you're like, but I want to also listen to the songs.
I'm Meatloaf.
I'd say that's true here, too. Having listened to the best of Meatloaf, I'm pretty sure there's 1 to 2 Meatloaf albums that are better to listen to than this CD.
And so it is Meatloaf.
It is Meatloaf.
I could do anything for love.
I'd do anything for love. Parentheses.
Yay,
but I won't do that.
That.
Great cinematic music video.
Yes.
Phantom of the Opera thing. Apparently, the woman in the music video received offers for record contracts, despite the fact that she was not the lady singing on the song.
So much of that going on in the 90s. Yeah.
And Meatloaf, lest we forget, possibly killed at a notable local convention that I guess I won't name.
Oh yeah.
Isn't that a shame?
Unison.
Do an interview that says, I'm not getting vaccinated. If I die, I die. Then he died.
Yeah. That was not a good look.
Yeah. His name
was Robert Paulson.
His name was Robert Paulson.